Indeed, we've got open lines for you. Hey, here's some dates for you. I love looking at future dates, so I want to pass these on to you, and we'll be talking about these more as we get close. Now that we are officially into August already, that's incredible. We'll have a live program for you on Labor Day Monday night, September 7th, okay? We'll have that. Halloween is on Saturday in October, October 31st. Ian Punnett will do Ghost to Ghost that night. Thanksgiving Thursday, down there the end of November, I'll have a live program for you there, so we'll be here Thanksgiving night. And then Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, Thursday, Friday, I'll be here. We'll have live programs for you on that night, some special open lines and some guests and stuff like that. We'll have some fun. And in terms of vacation time, contractually, I get 3 weeks out of the year and holidays, and I only take 5 days plus 1 day a month. So I give up all the rest, but I'll probably take a vacation week after Christmas, and we'll have you all filled in on those shows too. What else do I need to tell you? Okay. Well, let's see. Contract expires the end of 2012. I'm going to renew that for another 5 more years. That's enough for now. Back with open lines. Okay, back to open lines we go. Let's go to the coincidence line first of all, or no coincidences. Jason, Rapid City, South Dakota. Hi, Jason. How are you?
Yeah, I'm back. I got something happened with my phone, which doesn't make me feel any better about the coincidence I told you about.
Which one was that?
About the thing that I saw in the doorway, and then saw it on my friend's screensaver.
No! That was it. You were at the end. I just didn't know what you saw. Obviously. Okay. Thanks. Let's go to Auburn, Washington. Susan, you're up with us. Hi, Susan.
Hi, George. First time caller, and thrilled to get through. I have two very short stories. One is about 9/11. My girlfriend and I were comparing notes, like within 24 hours of 9/11 happening. And this is the story. After the first plane hit, I just turned the news on. And so I anytime there's some big news event, I get my kids and have them come watch. And so I ran upstairs and I woke them all up and made them come down. And just as they came down, the second plane hit. And my one son just turned ashen. And I can't remember which dream he had. But when my girlfriend and I compared notes, just before the planes hit, like within the hours before while they were sleeping, because we're on the West Coast, one of our sons saw planes hitting tall buildings, and the other of our sons saw the two tall buildings fall. And so that was quite a coincidence, not a coincidence. The second story, I was actually at a church listening to a gentleman speak about angels, and I was very pregnant at the time, and it was very packed, and I was hot, and so at some point towards the end, I walked out onto the front porch, and I looked up, and I saw this sweet old man walking by on the sidewalk, and I smiled to him, and he smiled to me, and you know, I was just touched by his smile, yeah. And I turned around to look at a bulletin board, and I only looked at it for maybe 10 seconds. I turned back around, and the man was gone. And where this front porch was at, you had not quite a 360-degree view, but you had a full view of everything, and all the way down the street, both ways, and around the, both sides of the church, and he is just gone. And, you know, I got the tingles up my spine, and my hair stood on end, and I thought, here I am, I've been in the church listening to someone talk about angels, and wow, I think I just saw one.
It was Clarence from It's a Wonderful Life.
You know, it could have been. It was some man with that kind of a sweet countenance about him. But the the dreams about the 9/11, my girlfriend and I weren't surprised. You know, the Bible talks about in these end times, our children will have visions and see dreams. And it wasn't the first time my children had dreams of a spiritual nature, but this one was very close to home and very clear. And as I'm asking my son questions, I mean, he's kind of sitting there shaking and white, and he had just seen a dream. In fact, when I woke him up to make them hurry up, run downstairs and watch what's going on, he was woken up out of the dream he had about, and again, I can't remember, plane hitting a building or the building collapsing, which son saw which, but...
My daughter had the same kind of dream, Susan, a couple weeks before it happened. She didn't know exactly what she was seeing in her dream, other than she was in a big city looking at ash falling from above, and she said it was about 6 inches thick as she was walking through it, and she said you could barely breathe. And, you know, I thought maybe she's dreaming of a volcano or something like that. Next up, let's go to Sacramento, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Ryan, go ahead.
Hey, what's going on?
Oh, all is well.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. I actually had a question for you and then also want to share a quick little story.
Sure.
Do you know any websites that have, like, you can, like, look up different areas that maybe have had, like, UFO sightings and areas like that? Because there's one I saw here in Roseville, actually, and UFO meaning... It was unidentified. I have no idea what it was, but I know it wasn't a plane, and I know it wasn't lightning. But what was really cool about it, and a coworker saw it too, it was I worked till about 11:30 every night, so I got home, took my dog for a walk. I was looking up at the sky. There hasn't been rain for a month. It was during summer about a month ago, and in one of the clouds, there was just like every 30 seconds, a light. The cloud. It looked like in just that cloud, it was like a lightning storm. Watching that cloud, it'd make a spherical, so you couldn't see what the light was, but it would light up that whole cloud. It was really cool looking.
Ooh.
But it was like a huge cloud, but in that cloud is just one spherical part light up. Cool, you could see like the outline of like the fluffy parts of the cloud. And they do like every 30 seconds, so it wasn't moving, it was just that one cloud doing it.
Well, I'll tell you the websites you need to go look for. Just search National UFO Reporting Center and the Mutual UFO Network. Just do that, and you'll come across. Euclid, Ohio, first-time caller. Hey, Ken, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I have a strange story, but can I ask you one quick question?
Yeah.
When are you going to have Alex Jones back on?
Alex was just on.
Was he? I haven't been keeping up.
Yeah, he was just on, I think it was last night, yeah.
Oh,
night
wow.
Before. Night before last.
Must have missed that one. Okay.
But he'll be back. He always pops on. When something breaks that is right down his bailiwick, we pop him on.
He's awesome. I'm going to tell you a personal story because I'll probably call back if I can get through. This is my first time on, but the story is it's about 18 years ago. It's probably like 91. It's like my first year of college. And I was playing a video game. It's not even, it's outdated. It doesn't even exist anymore. It's called Sega Genesis. I don't know if you're familiar with it. So I'm playing this game.
You're talking to a guy who used to play Pong. That's about it.
Okay. Well, I started with Pong when I was a little kid, too.
I think I still
do. No, they progressed. They progressed, and it was, I guess I said the brand name, but it was by Sega. And they, I'm playing the game, and the game froze. And then it started to repeat Satan, 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 over and over and over again. I was frozen. I was in disbelief. I didn't think that this thing was doing it. I thought it was me. I thought that I was not hearing this game. So I had a room in the attic away from the rest of my family. So I had to run downstairs. So I finally got enough. I finally unfroze where I could run and get my family. I was like, I run downstairs, and I didn't get my parents. I got a couple of my younger brothers. I said, hey, this video game is saying Satan, like, hurry up and come hear this and see it. When we got upstairs to my attic, the room, the screen was totally black.
Gee, did somebody program that, Kenny?
I don't know. And that's what my family actually calls me, Kenny. It's weird. but I go by Ken, but yeah. It was like when you said that, it was like I was flashing back when like one of my brothers was saying, Kenny, what do you mean? And they believed me. They thought, they knew that I was not playing. They probably saw it in my face, like, But it's been three things that happened in my life where I've known where it's been like out of the ordinary paranormal. And I don't know if they program those things and they just glitch like that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It was very busy and I could hear the words. I was doubting myself. I listened to it a good 20 times before I could move because I just didn't believe it.
There was a little doll that little kids would get, little girls would buy. And, you know, it talked and it had a little kind of chip in it or maybe even a tiny little tape thing. And somebody had put in there some swear words or something. You remember that? It was a couple of years ago. So little kids would listen to it and it would go, "Hi there, I'm talking Tina." And then it would say something horrible. So that could have happened, Ken, in that video too. Somebody who was making them could have said, "Hey, let's throw this thing in there." So maybe it wasn't in every one, but just a few. Let's go to Buffalo, New York, east of the Rockies. Dave, it's all you.
Hi, George. Good morning.
Yeah.
I have a quick question and then my story. Do you know if Planet X is supposed to be visible to the naked eye yet?
If there is a Planet X, it is not visible yet to the naked eye.
Okay. All right, then my story, quick ghost story. I was at work last week, and late at night I'm the only person there. And I do all the late night cleanup and stuff
sure.
like that in a restaurant.
That's creepy all by itself. Being all by yourself, isn't it?
Especially when it's the building's from 1932. And I was just making up the cash drawer assignments for the next day. And I heard these voices come in. And I'm figuring my parents own it. I'm thinking maybe they happened to drop by late at night for some reason.
Yeah.
And I'm doing my work. And when I didn't see them, you know, come walking by me or anything, I go walking out. And when people always say it feels cold, but instead it was like this hot electricity that was like everywhere. And it was like thick. It was like super thick. Like you could literally cut the knife with it. And I looked out to a table and two menus were unfolded on the menus. Our two menus were folded down on the table. And there was no way they could like fall out. They were like in between a napkin holder and the ketchup bottles. And I just like turned tail and just got out of there.
Ghosts coming in for a late night snack, Dave.
Exactly.
All right, thanks. Next up, we go to Minnesota. John, there you go.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Okay.
Hey, I've got a couple of quick things. First, to expound on what an earlier caller said, Dan, I believe it was. One of the interesting quotes that come from Obama not too long ago, he said that his next 100 days would be so successful that he would get them done in 72 days.
Jeez.
Which, when you first listen to that, it's like, okay, 72 days. But when you think about the number 72, that's actually a pretty esoteric number. You've had guests on the show talking about the significance of 72. So I just thought when I had heard that quote, it sort of rang a bell, and I was like, wow, that's pretty interesting there.
Maybe they're all in code. You know that?
Yeah, it's hard to say. There's a lot of things going on that makes you wonder. The second thing I had for you was talk about Mr. LaCrim a little bit when he was on. I didn't feel sick at all, but I was just kind of listening along to what he was saying. And there was a couple things that I would sort of take issue with, and one of them is he was saying that that the Christians are waiting for the return of Maitreya as our
Savior.
Right. And I would kind of take issue with that as a Christian. I don't think most Christians are waiting for the Maitreya. Now, we are waiting for a Savior. We do believe in the second coming, most of us anyway, I would hope, but sometimes. But we're waiting actually for Jesus Christ, like the same one in the Bible, and we're not waiting for like a Christ-like frequency. We're not waiting for the super ethereal energy of Christ. We're waiting for the actual Jesus Christ to come back down and help set the world straight.
I hope he shows up fast, don't you?
I hope he does too, because obviously there's a lot of straightening out that needs to go on, and it's not the end of the world, it's the end of the age. This age, so part of what Mr. LeCrim was talking about, going into the age of Aquarius and stuff like that, yeah, we get that. This present age is about ready to end. Then we believe, or most of us believe, there's going to be this 7-year period called the tribulation period. I mean, you've heard a lot about that.
Yep, you've learned.
Yeah, things are going to get bad before they get better. But eventually, there is going to be a coming golden age. But one of the things Jesus warned us about was he said, be careful, take heed that no one deceives you, because many will come in my name saying, I am the Christ.
See, well, that's why so many people were getting a little ill when Benjamin Krim was on. Couple minutes to go here. Let's take a few more. Jacksonville, we go. North Carolina, it's Bill. Hey, Bill, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you doing, George? I had a buddy who called in a few weeks talking about hunting Bigfoot and bringing the body to you. He's a Marine Corps sniper about to get out.
Right, but, and I tried to talk him out of that. Remember?
Yes, I do. I believe he told him to take a photo because Marine Corps snipers believe in killing more than taking pictures.
That's true.
But I had a question about Mel Waters. I don't know if you knew anything about him. Then I had a quick story about strange coincidences.
Mel, we are still working on. We've got his email, and Tommy tells me that he's getting very close also to possibly get him for an interview.
Okay.
He is long gone from Mel's hole, I'll tell you that.
Well, I knew the last time you talked to him, he had talked to Art Bell, and that'd been
that was a long time ago. Yeah.
Yes, it had. But my quick coincidence for you was I lived in some band members, and he always had some photos and paintings of band members up there. And I was walking by, and I got a stomachache about 9 o'clock at night. I thought it was a painting of Janis Joplin, and I talked to him at work the next day, and I said, you know, I was in the house last night and had this horrible pain in my stomach about 9 o'clock, and I looked up at the photo or the painting, and, you know, I just thought that was weird. And he said, you thought that was a painting of Janis Joplin? Yeah. Well, that was a painting that my art teacher did of me in 8th grade. I thought to myself, well, that's just crazy. So... I appreciate it, George.
All right, you got it. Your buddy looks like Janis Joplin, huh? You never know. Who's up next? Andy, truck driving in Ohio. Take it away, Andy. There you go.
Hey, George, how the heck are you?
Okay.
Hey, I got a request. I need a good laugh tonight. There was something that played some last time back. It was a guy's recording from an accident in Texas. Three little old ladies got out of the car and beat the heck out of some guy.
Sounded just like you, as a matter of fact. Same kind of voice. Yeah, we'll play that in a few months from now, and you'll laugh your head off when we do. That it was a tape recording of a guy who was late for a meeting and left a message with his boss. But we'll play that as we maybe get into November or something like that. I played it a couple times last year, and it's funny. Probably one of the funniest things I've heard in a long, long time. Well, if you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Just simply fire away. Ian Punnett is going to be on Saturday with a couple great guests, and I'll be on Sunday night for you. And when we come back, we're going to talk about premonitions. You've had a few of those, haven't you? Larry Dossey, our expert on premonitions. That'll be coming up in just a moment. And also a little special thank you shout out to all of you. I'll do that in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. Indeed, indeed. And by the way, time for a traditional shout out. Thanks for supporting Coast to Coast AM, the number one rated program at night in the world. Those of you listening to your favorite radio stations in North America, thank you. Streamlink members as well. Don't forget, you can go back for a year now and past programs, XM Satellite, and then the various chat rooms. Again, the NighthawkZone.com, folks, happy 4th anniversary, Imaginative Worlds, Into Infinity, National Radio Club, Sorcery, IRC, MySpace groups, the Yahoo chat rooms, the Northern Kentucky Paranormal Group, Above Top Secret, and so many more. Thanks for listening to Coast AM. Up next, Larry Dossey and Premonitions. Tonight we talk about premonitions, the power of premonitions. Larry, time goes by too fast, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I must say, it's great to be back with you again, George.
Good to have you here, too. Great job, by the way. Now, this is an area that I just love, and, you know, I try to use it every day. I try to get people I know to use the power of their premonitions, and here you are writing about it. How did you get into this?
I got into it kicking and screaming, George. To tell you the truth, I really didn't want much to do with this, but I had a premonition back in my first year of medical practice, which really shook me up and changed my worldview considerably. Shall I go into it for you?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, well, I was a member of a medical group in Dallas made up of a bunch of very talented internists and subspecialists. And one night I had this astonishingly vivid dream of the son of one of the doctors who was one of my colleagues. And I saw this young 4-year-old boy stretched out on an examining table, and a technician was trying to do something to his head, trying to perform some sort of test. This kid was not buying this at all. He went nuts. He just went berserk. And the little boy just started kicking and screaming and yelling. His mother was standing by his side and trying to lend comfort. This was not working. Finally, this technician in the dream just threw up her hands and turned around and said, "I quit," and she just simply walked away. Well, I woke up, and this seemed so trivial to me that I just couldn't understand why I dreamt about this. And I started to wake up my wife and tell her about this dream, but I thought, you know, this is just so silly. I can't do that. I went to work. I saw patients in the hospital, and all morning long, I saw patients in my office, and I pretty much forgot about this dream by noon until I was sitting with the father, the doctor, my colleague, in the luncheon area. We were just chit-chatting about nothing, and in walks his wife holding this little boy in her arms, and his head is wet. He's crying. He's very upset. And she proceeds to tell her husband what had happened.
Oh, my.
Actually, she just described my dream. They came from the electroencephalography laboratory where they do brainwave tests. She described how they tried to do the test on the boy's head. He just wasn't cooperative at all. He was such a mess that they had to abandon the procedure. That was it. And I was unnerved by this. I knew in a heartbeat that if this was true, that my worldview had just been completely rearranged.
Oh, it turned upside down.
And I, like most physicians, knew that you couldn't know things before they happened. I mean, this was just not consistent with my medical education. What I did, George, when she left with this child, I went to the office of my colleague, and I told him about my dream. He was really shaken up by this. He would not talk about it. He refused to discuss it, and he never discussed it.
Why?
Because he was afraid to. He was afraid to acknowledge that these things could happen because he, like I, knew that if that was the case, we had to reevaluate how the world worked, and this was just too painful. I must say, I was not very courageous in this myself. I tried to put the lid on it and sort of, you know, not deal with it, but that didn't work very well because when word got out that I was sort of interested in these kinds of strange things, my patients began to come to me and tell me about their premonitions.
So they didn't run away from you, did they?
No, they didn't, and that's very interesting. Part of this, I think that if we give people the context to discuss these things, and if they know they're not going to be preached at or put down or embarrassed publicly, they will come forward. This was certainly my experience with my patients. They would come and tell me visions that they had and dreams and about what was going on inside their body, and we would do tests and which would confirm their visions and their premonitions. One woman came to me one morning. She was a brilliant attorney, longtime patient of mine, and she said she was horrified. She had had a dream the night before. It was more like a nightmare. She saw three little white spots on her left ovary, and she was convinced she had ovarian cancer. We did a sonogram, and sure enough, she had three little white spots on her left ovary.
Jeez.
Fortunately, they were benign ovarian cysts and not cancer, but she had a camera-like, graphic, specific premonition in the form of a dream. So it went from there, George. Nurses began to convey to me their premonitions, and I got to say that I've never bumped into a professional group that was more open to premonitions about health situations than nurses. I'm married to one, and I just honor them deeply for their willingness to come forward with this kind of information.
The premonitions seem to be warnings, don't they?
Yeah. If you look at the etymology of the word, it comes from Latin words meaning a forewarning, which is a big clue to the usually unpleasant stuff that they convey to us. That's not absolute. People do have forewarnings and premonitions of pleasant things. I've got a couple of cases where people actually saw winning lottery numbers in their dreams. So there are a few pleasant stories out there.
Yeah.
You know, but mostly, yeah, it's about crises, impending disasters, and health problems and things like that.
I talked a little bit last hour, and I want you to elaborate more on the story in The Powers of Premonition about the mother who just had this dream, this feeling that a chandelier could hurt her little baby in a crib.
This is one of the really jaw-dropping, eye-popping premonitions that I came across. It has to do with a young mother that I call Amanda, in Washington State. And one night, she had a horrifying nightmare. She dreamt that the chandelier in the baby's room next to her and her husband's bedroom fell from the ceiling, and this heavy chandelier killed the baby and crushed the crib and just demolished it. She woke up, and she woke her husband up and told him the dream. He was not much help. He told her it was just silly and to go back to sleep, which he promptly did. But she was too scared. She couldn't go back to sleep. She got out of bed and went and brought the baby back to bed with her husband and her. And so a couple of hours later, she and her husband were awakened by a huge crash in the next room. They both got up and went into the baby's room and saw that the chandelier had indeed fallen out of the ceiling onto the crib and just demolished the crib. Certainly the baby would have been severely injured and probably killed had she not rescued the baby. But because she acted on her premonition, the baby's life was saved. This is one of those instances that take place in one of the most common contexts of premonitions, which has to do with the connection between mothers and their children. And there's just something about this bond, this maternal childhood bond that forms the emotional juice that seems to catalyze so many premonitions that we read about.
I think it's natural, Larry, don't you?
Yeah, it's natural, George. You know, these kinds of things between mothers and children are universal. The mother-child thing is just one of the most common themes throughout the whole literature on premonitions. The Jungian psychologists have a particular way of looking at this. They talk about the mother-child archetype, this pattern of behavior and connection that is universal, that is timeless, that penetrates every culture we know anything about. And this bond often is activated and by premonitions and accounts for some of the numinosity or the vividness that we see in these particular types of premonitions, as this case with Amanda and the chandelier is a tremendous example of that.
Your work, The Power of Premonitions, is it a research book or is it primarily a book about premonitions?
Well, if it were just the book about people's stories, I don't think I would have written it, because books about people's stories, premonition experiences, really have been around a long time. They're really nothing new. But what is new is the research. And the research factor is the thing that actually pushed me into putting my name on a book on premonitions and going forward with it. In the past 5 or 6 years, the research has been done silently and invisibly for the most part. Not too many people know about the research I talk about in the book, which documents in computer design studies that people can have premonitions even unconsciously in the vast majority of subjects in these experiments. I find this research compelling. There's just no way you can fool these computers, and they show that we have an unconscious, premonitory, precognitive ability that is just there. It appears to be built in, hardwired in our nature. I maintain that it's part of our genetic structure that has developed throughout the ages of our evolutionary ascent, because it does one thing important, George. It fosters survival.
You don't think, though, it's a spiritual gift to us?
Oh, I think it is a gift.
Okay.
But I think by this time it's been internalized to such a degree that it has become innate.
Well, you know, the reptilian part of our brain, Larry, as you know, being a doctor, kicks in during times of crises or stress.
Right.
You know, and it protects us.
Right.
I would assume that maybe premonition might do the same thing.
Well, you use the magic word protection. It protects us against upcoming hazards to our health. You know, if you think about this from an evolutionary point of view, a premonition sense would be just the sort of thing that an intelligent organism would develop in order to increase its odds for survival. If someone knew just a little bit ahead of time that disasters were going to happen, that there were threats to their life, that they faced danger, they could take evasive action and increase their odds of survival a bit, and therefore increase the chance that they would procreate and pass on more offspring. So this is the condition, so evolutionary biologists say, that favor the incorporation of a trait into our genetic structure. So,
would you say that intuitiveness, Larry, and premonitions could be the same thing, one and the same?
Yeah, I think intuition is inseparable from premonitions. And, you know, if you talk to a lot of people, particularly in the business world, they don't like the term premonitions because it sounds too much like ESP, and, you know, they get really edgy and nervous about that. And so the sanitized term for premonitions in the business world is business intuition. And if you Google business intuition, you'll come up with about 250,000 hits, because that's sort of a growth industry now, teaching people how to develop their business intuition.
I think most, if not all, successful business people have incredible intuitive powers and the ability to tap into premonitions.
You know, I've got a long list of people who say that, and the titans of modern business are on the list. Steve Jobs, Donald Trump, Bill Gates, and Oprah Winfrey are all on record as saying that they owe their success in the business world to following their intuition.
And, of course, you know, the success in business world equates to money, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, I have always been a believer that one is successful without money. You have to be happy within yourself.
Right.
I think you can have premonitions that save yourself. I'll use my old story again, and everybody's going to go, hey, here he goes again. But this is my coming up to a four-stop light story, and at an intersection. And as I'm ready to buzz through the green light, right? I've got the right of way. Something tells me this premonition, don't go through. So I stop. I stop before I get to a green light. It's unheard of. You know, people are behind me.
Yeah.
A guy goes through his red light. It would have smashed right into me. Smashed right into me. What does that, Larry?
Well, that's a great example. What does it, I think, is what Jim Carpenter, a psychologist and consciousness researcher who studies these phenomena called first sight. You know, this the term that has been used for centuries to describe premonitions in many cultures in the West, it was second sight. You know, people who had second sight had premonitions and clairvoyance and all this sort of thing. But Carpenter's research suggests that this is so innate, so fundamental, and works so thoroughly to help us increase our survival odds that we ought to stop talking down about this and elevate the term to first sight.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living. Your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space.